Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Sid Garza-Hillman, certified nutritionist and weight management coach, author of Approaching the Natural, a Health Manifesto, out on Roundtree Press in about 2 weeks, in theory. And I am joined today, I'm really happy to have Jean Bauer with me. Jean is the co-founder and president of Farm Sanctuary and also author, best-selling author of Farm Sanctuary, Changing Hearts and Minds About Animals and Foods, out on Simon & Schuster. Jean, welcome.
It's great to be with you, Sid.
Great to be with you, too. I'm just going to real quick give everybody kind of a quick background. I just met you recently, and it was such a great thing. Years ago, my wife adopted a turkey for me for my birthday, and which is December 21st, so it was in the kind of the holiday season. And I had no idea what it was. How do you adopt a turkey? What is this? And it was Farm Sanctuary. And so I started looking into it. And this is, I mean, honestly, it's probably 6 or 7 years ago. And after that, I started giving to your organization and, you know, reading up on you and everything. And then all of a sudden, a few weeks ago, you showed up here at the Stanford Inn, and people said, oh, yeah, Jean Bauer's here from, he's the president of Farm Sanctuary. And I went, I know exactly who Jean Bauer is. So you and I and Jeff and Suzanne had a really nice meal. And correct me if I'm wrong, Jean, but I think the meal, I could be exaggerating a little, but I think it was like 15 or 16 hours. Is that your memory?
That's like half long, but it was a darn good meal. I remember that.
I just remember sitting down and then just going, my God, I think it was like over 4 hours, if I remember. But it was a really good conversation. And then you were kind enough to give me a really nice blurb on the back of the book. And so when these interviews came up, and I thought, what a perfect person to sit down and talk to. And I want to have you, if it's okay, give a brief background of how you got into it. What fascinated me in hearing the version of sort of your life and how you got into this is you've been an activist for almost your entire life, and that's not something that I come across very frequently, and so I'm fascinated about that. I do want to get into that deeper, but if you could sort of give us a quick brief background about how you got into it and how you ultimately started Farm Sanctuary.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Well, I grew up in L.A., California, and I was encouraged, like most people growing up in the 1960s, to get a job and go into business. I was born in 62, so my folks were very much into the regular American way of living and living well. But as I grew up, I saw so many problems around me. There were homeless people, homeless animals. The environment was being destroyed. And I didn't feel like I wanted to be a cog in a wheel of a system that I thought was causing so much harm. So I started working with human rights organizations and then with environmental organizations and then with some Ralph Nader consumer organizations. Just trying to make a difference. And as time went, I learned more and more about factory farming and industrial animal agriculture and then the harm it causes to animals, to the environment, and to people. And there was not much attention being focused on factory farming in the 1980s. So in 1985, I decided to do something that I could do, which was I became a vegan, eating no meat, dairy, or eggs, and that was a statement against the factory farming industry, but also a statement for health and for sanity. And then in 1986, I co-founded Farm Sanctuary, and we started by visiting farms to document conditions, and we would find living animals literally thrown in trash cans or left on piles of dead animals. We started rescuing them, and we now operate 3 sanctuaries, one in upstate New York, 2 in California. And these are sanctuaries for animals, so people can come and meet them, get to know them, hear their stories, learn about the abusive system they came from. And then we also work to educate people about factory farming and encourage people ultimately to make more humane choices, healthier choices about their own food. And then we advocate for reforms. We work to stop the cruelty of factory farming through legislative efforts. So we do rescue education and advocacy, and we now have members across the U.S., and we'd love for people to come visit our farms.
That's great. For interest of disclosure, I am a member. I give every month to you guys. And I also got approved a couple years ago to adopt a couple sheep. And I just have to build a structure on my land, and I'm ready to go. I had twins in the interim, and that was a shocker and prohibitive to me taking on sheep. But now I'm ready. Anyhow, so I guess what I wanted to get into because you know that I share the same ethic, because my book is, you know, like a, it's a, ultimately it's a philosophy of living. And so I think that speaks to, I think you come at it with the same goals in a way, but in a different way than I do. And I want to, I guess there's a few things that come up for me as I work with people, and I'm a certified nutritionist, so a lot of my work is purely in, on the nutrition side. And I know that you and I talked about that a little bit, and I know that you incorporate a little bit of the nutrition, or maybe more, you know, I'm not exactly sure, but how much of that into your approach. Is there a so you're you've done this for years. You started, you know, Farm Sanctuary in 1986. How I look at videos sometimes. I know that you have physically gone to these you know, locations and seen with your eyes the treatment of these animals. Sometimes I'll go and look at videos and things like that. My wife is constantly going, why are you doing that? You know, you're acting on it. Like, do not do that anymore. How frustrating is it for you as an activist? How slow is the process? Do you just pull your hair out sometimes and go, my God, like, I know that today I wake up and this is literally still happening? Or have you sort of found a good balance in your own life in the way that you approach animal rights?
Yeah, well, you know, progress is very, very slow, and that can be extremely frustrating. You know, when you know all these bad things are happening and feel that change isn't occurring fast enough, and it certainly is not. And that can be very unsettling. But what I try to do is I try to focus on the good things that are happening and acknowledge the bad things and recognize them and not deny that there's enormous problems. But I try not to dwell in those, and instead I dwell in the good things that are happening. If somebody tells me, for example, that they've started eating less meat, or they've started, you know, stopped eating veal, or, you know, did anything to go in a positive direction, I take heart from that, and I support that, and I encourage that. And I believe that small steps often lead to bigger steps. And once you start building momentum for change, it can start growing, and it can grow exponentially at a certain point. I think today, for the first time ever, there is a widespread opposition to industrialized animal agriculture in the United States. So that is a very positive trend. Also, the number of animals being slaughtered in the U.S. has started to go down for the first time in history. That is significant. So we're starting to see some positive changes, and I really believe it's rooted in people acting in a way that is more aligned with their own interests. You know, it doesn't make sense to eat food that makes us sick, which is what most Americans do, and it's very sad to see. But when people are eating these foods that are unhealthy, and I'm talking primarily about animal foods as well as processed foods, but when people are eating these foods that make them sick, they're also supporting an industry that is abusive and that does not match up to consumers' values. So the factory farming industry and the animal slaughter business is something that is inherently violent, and people don't feel good about it. So it is not aligned with their own empathy and with their own humanity and their own compassion. And so people are, you know, as people start making choices that they can feel good about, that are aligned with their values, I think we're seeing a shift away from animal foods towards more plant foods, and it's a very positive thing. So I look at that, and, you know, with Farm Sanctuary, we have seen the horrors of animal production and animal slaughter and animals just discarded, left as on dead piles, treated like unfeeling commodities. So we've seen the horrible part, but we're able also to rescue these animals and watch them heal once they come to Farm Sanctuary and watch their lives being transformed. And in a sense, as their lives are changed and transformed, ours are as well. So Farm Sanctuary is a place of change and transformation and hope and a better future. And I sort of dwell in that space.
Thank you. That's great. I always hate when interviewers go, "That's great," but it is. I wanted to ask you in line with that, and I kind of, the reason why I mentioned nutrition is because you mentioned, you know, it's also food that, you know, that is good for your body, you know, and I make that case in the book that it's no coincidence that it's, you know, the very same diet that's the most ethical, the most environmentally friendly, is the same as the one that's the most healthy. And I want to clue in on a couple things. One is you constantly mention industrial factory farming. A lot of what I get from people is this sort of argument that as a species we've always eaten meat, you know, straight up always eaten meat. And I would never deny that. Obviously there's a history of animal consumption. I think the amount of animal consumption in our history is a certain arguable, it's a little bit of a contention there in terms of how much we really consumed. By most accounts, it's a lot less than what we're assuming by like the paleo craziness and all that kind of stuff. But given what you say, your focus is on the industrial side. What is stopping you, Gene Bauer, from consuming, going out into the forest and shooting a deer yourself?
Yeah, well, actually, I oppose all unnecessary violence. So I don't need to shoot a deer. I don't need to eat meat. I don't need to drink cow's milk or any other kind of animal product. I don't need chicken, eggs. And so I choose not to consume them, you know, no matter how the animals are raised. Even if an animal is living in a decent condition, although most of the animals that are raised and sold as free range or free roaming are actually living in what I would call factory farms. So those labels tend to be misleading to begin with. But even if an animal was raised in a natural environment and was able to express themselves and enjoy their lives to some degree, killing them is an inherently violent act. And it's something that I don't want to support, something I don't want to participate in. So for me, eating plants is healthier. It is more aligned with the idea of living compassionately, and it's something I choose to do. And to me, it makes all the sense in the world.
Okay. And then as far as, you know, when you ever hear somebody, I get this a lot, you know, because personally I'm vegan. Nutritionally, I promote a whole plant-based diet. But I get a lot of like, well, what's the problem with somebody who just has a few chickens around and they lay eggs and they eat the eggs?
Well, it would depend on where that chicken came from. You know, sometimes people buy chickens from hatcheries and then they're supporting the hatchery business. And oftentimes chickens who are raised to become egg-laying hens are of certain breeds where the males are useless. So at the hatchery, you have the females that are kept and the males that are literally thrown away the day they hatch. So by purchasing these egg-laying hens from hatcheries, people might be actually supporting an industry that is killing half of the chicks hatched every day. So that's one problem. Now, if somebody were to rescue hens that had been exploited in the egg industry, you know, such as from a battery cage operation, after about a year or two, those hens are sent to slaughter or they're just killed, and because they're useless to the egg industry because they're not producing at a certain level. Now, if a person has space and was willing to bring in those chickens from those factory farms or from any farm where they're being exploited and to let them live out their lives, and then those hens will likely still lay eggs, and if the people were to use those eggs, I don't think there's an ethical problem with that. As long as the primary concern is the animal's welfare, that the animal will be allowed to live out their life and will be cared for, much like we care for our cats and dogs, who we see as parts of our family. The danger is that sometimes people might see the chicken primarily as an egg-producing machine or egg source, and if the animal stops producing the eggs, they might desire to kill them. So that's where a potential problem exists. But if the primary thing is to give the animal a good life and they're laying eggs, I think ethically there would not be a problem with consuming those eggs.
Have you read Will Tuttle's book, World Peace Diet?
I sure have. I really like that book.
Yeah, me too. So what he speaks to in that, I think what you're getting at, is sort of the mindset of exploitation in general. And I think that's something that I've kind of grappled with is as I started getting deeper, just on a personal level, deeper into the whole world of raising animals, is we do have this very unique part of our species that we herd and we keep other species, even dogs and cats that are considered companion animals. There is this thing of our, and that's sort of that's what I'm speaking to, is sort of raising chickens in that way. It's still, you have little production units in a way. And I think what you're getting at is sort of, what is your intention behind that act? Because I could have chickens and you could have chickens, but I could have what I see are vessels to produce. And when they're done producing, you know, like the worker's done producing, you fire them. And then when the chicken's done producing, you kill them. And so it's sort of, Will Tuttle spoke to sort of the ethic of even just having, even if a cow is in a nice, you know, pasture, it's still a kept animal in a, it might be a big cage, but it's a cage, essentially a cage, and the animal's just standing there for their whole lives.
That's very true, and it all boils down to our relationship. Is our relationship one of companionship and friendship and sort of, you know, mutual benefit, or is it one of exploitation? And that's really what it boils down to. And in the case of animals today, many of them have been mass-bred by humans for the food industry specifically, but also in terms of cats and dogs who have been bred to be pets. And so we need to look critically at our relationship with these animals. And, you know, there's lots of animals on the planet today who we have brought onto the planet through breeding practices. And so we have to be responsible for them, but I think we need to look at the relationship more broadly and ask ourselves what ultimately makes sense, and how do we relate to these other animals, and how should we relate to these other animals? And it's a big question, but it really boils down to our relationship. What is it? Is it one of respect and compassion and companionship, companionability, or is it one of exploitation? And those are sort of the two different approaches. And, of course, I favor the former and, you know, ask people just to consider how they're relating to other animals.
So I have a couple quotes to read you, and I want your response. The first is this: we can judge the heart of a man by his treatment of animals. That's Immanuel Kant. And the second is, you can judge a society by the way it treats its animals, and that's Gandhi. I'm sure you're familiar with at least the second one, probably both. I mean, obviously I think you would agree, as I do too. I think in my experience with people, it's almost like, I was talking to Jeff Stanford about this yesterday, in fact. I said, if I could tell somebody, if you eat this food, people will die. Human beings will die. And I think people would say, I will never eat that again, period. You know, like, why would I ever eat something if somebody is going to die? How do you bridge the connection between a human death and an animal death? Because obviously in our society, animals are completely devalued. I had somebody respond one time about turkeys. They said, well, they're stupid. You know, so in other words, it's okay to treat them brutally because they're stupid. You know, it's like an intelligence thing. Of course, I'm thinking, you know, some humans in that case would deserve to be killed as well, you know, but right. how do you get that across that ultimately really does come down to how we value one life versus another life? And how do you sort of, in your conversations with people, how do you bridge that gap?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the way we treat other animals, you know, doesn't only affect those other animals, but it says an awful lot about us. You know, if we have power over other animals and we treat them with cruelty and disrespect, that says something about us. You know, on the converse, if we have control and power and we act with kindness and mercy, that says something else about us. And I think most people would rather, you know, act in a kind way instead of in a cruel way. And that kind of opens our hearts up. It opens our minds up. It opens up a whole new world to us. You know, instead of seeing an animal and only seeing a piece of meat, we can see an animal that has feelings, has experience, has actually a perspective on our planet and can help educate us. I think, you know, we probably got the idea to fly by watching birds, for example. And by, you know, got the idea for submarines by seeing turtles. And so watching other animals, we can, I think, elevate ourselves if we treat them with kindness and are open to learning from other animals. So I totally agree with the point that you can judge us by the way we treat other animals, and specifically by the way we treat those who we have control over, whether they be non-human animals or human animals.
And then what is the in with, I mean, is it through legislation? So what I mean by that is, okay, so I'm just a person, And I don't really, I eat what I eat because I've always been, I've been raised to eat hamburgers and, you know, which I was, by the way. But I got to a point where my in was, for myself, was I was an asthmatic. And when I changed my diet, my asthma went away. And then when once I changed my diet and started thinking about the things that I ate, it I started to becoming more open. All of a sudden, I was paying attention to things. And then I was like, oh, my God, and this is happening. And also this is happening. And this is happening in the environment and all these kinds of things. For the general public that is still just, they go to swing by McDonald's because they're hungry and they feed their kid because the kid's hungry and they're on their way to school. Do you open that door directly? Do you go through legislation? Do you go through what channels do you go to at least put that little seed of information in somebody's head? Like, by the way, what you're eating is not a burger so much as it is muscle from a cow and, you know, XYZ after that. How do you do that as an activist?
No, that is a challenging thing to figure out, and different people respond to different messages and different approaches. For some people, they see the cruelty of factory farming, and they say they don't want to participate in it. You know, when they've seen an image of an animal in a cage where they're packed so tightly they can't turn around even, and they can only stand up and lay down, and that is it. And people see that, they're appalled, and they say, I don't want to have anything to do with that industry. That's how some people respond. Other people respond to learning about the sentience of animals, and they learn about the emotional life and the intelligence of pigs, for example, being smarter than dogs, and they start wondering, well, if they're that smart, should I eat them? Other people respond to health, you know, learning that you can be healthier and live a better life by eating plant foods instead of animal foods causes people to shift, and sometimes it's the environment. Learning about how harmful agribusinesses and animal agriculture particularly is to the environment and how much more efficient it is to eat plant foods instead of animal foods. So people respond to different things. I think the main issue, though, is just being respectful, being patient, being persistent, and being a positive example and showing people and demonstrating to people that you can live well on a vegan diet. And when people see that, it tends to rub off on them. You know, we are social animals. We learn from those around us. And by living a kind, vegan life, other people see it and they tend to emulate it because it makes all the sense in the world when people start thinking about it.
I can't remember who said this quote, but it was something like, example isn't one way to influence people, it's the only way. And I think that's probably what you're getting at, is at the end of the day, you know, to live the example, you know, my wife gave birth to twins, you know, 100% vegan, and it's, you know, it horrifies people to hear that, and yet my kids are completely healthy and she's completely healthy. So it is just, it's, you can say a lot of things, but at the end of the day, you know, you put your money where your mouth is and people sort of start to listen.
I think it's very true. You know, people listen, they follow examples, and I think information also is important. You know, people need to see the pictures of what happens on today's modern farms. They need to be aware of the conditions, but they also need to know that they can make choices that are healthier and do not support that kind of cruel industry. They can make choices, and you can live well by eating plant foods and no animal foods. And, you know, we've been brought up in this country believing that to be healthy, we need animal foods. We need meat for protein. We need dairy products for calcium, for instance. Those are complete myths. And so it's just, you know, providing information and letting people know that they can live without eating animal foods, but being an example of that makes the case that much more strongly.
All right. Well, Gene, I really, really appreciate your time. I just want to finish up with one quick question, which is to tell us what is next on the Gene Bauer docket. Are you working on another book? Do you have a speaking tour? What's coming up?
Well, you know, I have a couple of talks coming up, one in Texas. I'm going to be speaking in Southern California at a veterinary school, Western University, down near Los Angeles. I will be running the L.A. Marathon in March. Farm Sanctuary is one of the charities that is supported by the L.A. Marathon. So if anybody's interested in that, we encourage people to get involved and to sign up. So I'm going to be doing that in March. And then I've signed up also to do an Ironman triathlon in this coming July. So I'll be getting ready for that, and that's going to be quite a daunting feat. So, but
and where's
I'll
that?
Demonstrate to do an Ironman, you swim 2.4 miles, then you bike 112 miles, and then you run a marathon, which is 26.2 miles. So that's quite a lot to do in one day, and I have done a half Ironman, so I've done half that distance, but this is a full Ironman. And I'll have to train and get ready for that and put a lot of good, healthy nutrition into my body, eat a lot of greens in the leading up to the Ironman.
I've thought about doing an Ironman in the past, but I just don't have the time. I'm doing a half marathon in May, but where is the Ironman that you're doing it?
Oh, it's at Lake Placid, New York.
Oh, very nice. Okay. Well, I'm doing a half marathon in May. That's about all I can muster, but maybe someday we will run a race together. That would be a pleasure for me. And I've just finished reading Scott Jurek's book, who's an ultra-marathoner, and I'm reading Rich Roll's book, who's an ultra-man. He's done, you know, multiple Ironman. He did 5 Ironmans in 7 days.
Amazing,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, absolutely insane. And by the way, 100% plant-based, both guys, so... anyhow, well, I really want to thank you, Gene, for everything that you do. And like I said, I've been following you for years, and it's such a pleasure to sit down and talk to you. And I hope to see you soon. And good luck with everything, and keep me posted. And I'm sure we'll be in touch.
Thanks. It's great talking to you, Sid. And I look forward to staying in touch, and I look forward to your book getting out there in the world.
Thank you very much. So thank you to Tyson and Rare Bird Lit. This is Sid Garza-Hillman, author of Approaching the Natural Health Manifesto and owner of Transitioning to Health Nutritional Consultations. Thank you very much, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
Around me turned to gold. I thought I had everything. Now I'm left without a hand to hold. But it's alright, I'm okay. How are you? But what it's worth, I must say, I love. Everything around me turned to rust. It's 'cause I built my life on sand, and I watched it crumble in the dust. Yeah, but it's alright, I'm okay. I wanna know how you are and what it's. But everything around me turned around. But I know all I have.
I lift myself way off the ground. Yeah.